car stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I'm Ben, and today we are joined, as always, by our super producer, Tristan, nicknamed TBA McNeil.
Sounds good.
That's the actual nickname.
Well, we'll try. We'll make an attempt.
We'll find something along the way. We usually do. Today's episode, I feel like, has a theme that we explored in a way in an earlier piece that came out a few weeks ago.
What's that one?
When we looked at abandoned factories.
Oh, that's right. We did look at those. Yeah. And this is a similar vein, I guess, in that we're going to be talking about abandoned racetracks. And I don't know if you've already mentioned this or not, Ben, but it comes from our own website. It comes from How Stuff Works.
Mm-hmm.
There's a list that we're going to follow along with here. And by no means are these the only abandoned racetracks, even in the United States. There are so many. Our country is just covered with abandoned racetracks of all sorts. I mean, you're going to find, old quarter midget tracks. You're going to find motocross tracks. You're going to find drag strips, all kinds of raceways that have been left to rot, left to, let nature take over again.
Right.
And that's what typically happens in these cases. And I find it really interesting that, you can just find tons of photos online of abandoned racetracks, and they have like a kind of a ghostly appearance to them, with the empty grandstands that are kind of falling apart. And a lot of them have, like wooden bleachers that are in disrepair. And, of course, the old, Winston racing signs and, the old signs that are hanging on the walls, I guess. And all that stuff is still there. The tower, where that used to formerly hold the members of the press or, the local sports writer, whoever was covering the big event, on the Friday night at the dirt track in town. All that stuff is still standing in a lot of cases. And in some cases, nature has almost completely taken over, and you have to look at an aerial photograph,
right,
in order to see the remnants of what was once there. But what's really fascinating, you would think that a lot of these places would be repurposed. A lot of them would be turned into something else. That something would move in there because it's typically a large piece of property.
Yeah,
really large,
and it's not a single loop of track. It's track, but then it's also a compound because there are buildings like pit buildings, concession stands, grandstands, like you said, restrooms, all of that stuff that's sort of a support network for the actual racetrack. And you would think people would say, hey, this stuff's already here. Let's go ahead and make it a factory or a store or some sort of business, or find another way to operate it as a racetrack. But the problem is racetracks are very expensive to maintain.
Yeah, and not only that, the fact that it was a racetrack, what was there, a lot of cars constantly parked there on the infield,
right,
dumping fluids when they probably shouldn't be. There were probably gas tanks installed at some place, on the track, either above ground or below ground.
Right.
You'll find that a lot of these places carry environmental issues with them that a builder or developer just simply doesn't want to tackle. So you'll find that a lot of times these tracks, these, maybe even, 100 acres, 200 acres of property are just kind of left to rot. And again, nature just takes over everything. And it always wins. Nature always wins, Ben. So,
yeah.
That's, you can see that like happening in your own backyard. If you leave it, for a month and don't mow back there, it starts to take over. It really does.
Well, nature plays the long game, my friend. So
it always does. Yeah. So we've got 10. Where do you want to start? You want to start at the what we'll call number 10 and count down. There's really no number one, I guess, though.
Right. We're not saying one racetrack is better at being abandoned than another.
No. And before we forget, or maybe we won't forget, but I'd like to point this out ahead of time. At the beginning part of the episode, think about racetracks in your own area that have gone away. The track that you used to go to when you were a kid that, now it's just a field, but there are trees. Think about those. Write in with those. Tell us what they were called.
Yeah.
Maybe we can find them on Google Earth or something like that. And it'd be interesting to just discover some hidden gems out there.
I definitely like this. I'm one of those people who never grew out of the childhood practice of, I'm not going to say breaking in to abandoned buildings, but I always loved exploring.
Oh, urban exploring.
Urban exploration, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot legally say that I've broken into abandoned buildings out of curiosity.
I see. But, I see the nod.
I cannot legally say that it was cool.
I understand. And, you know, some of these would be kind of cool to take a look at, but likely they're still private property.
Right.
You know, use caution. And when I said hidden gems, I probably meant hidden junk in a lot of cases, because most of them are in really, really poor shape, but still a fascinating thing to find out in the woods somewhere. You know, part of a dirt track or part of a paved track even. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah, that's another thing that's a very important point is if you happen to be on a road trip that brings you by one of these areas, or if you live in one of these areas, do make sure to respect no trespassing signs, things of that nature, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And if you are in contact with whomever does own this stuff, if it's still private property, I'm sure they'd be more than glad to let someone interested in the history of the racetrack explore it. But that's enough preamble, isn't it?
I bet the owner, like whoever owns that, probably would have a fantastic story to tell. So you know, it might be worthwhile talking to them. Maybe you can even get a guided tour of the property. Wouldn't that be cool?
Maybe you can tell them about your friends Scott and Ben, who would also like to check out these racetracks, starting with number 10. The Twin City Raceway.
Yes, and it's not where you would expect.
No.
I would think this would be in Minneapolis, right?
Right.
No, it's not in Minneapolis. It's in South Carolina, and it's a dirt track. And the Twin City Raceway, this is what really makes this one remarkable and why it stands out on this list. Now, it's abandoned, of course. I think it was around, for a very short amount of time. It was opened in 1964, and it closed in 1968. So this one's been gone for a long, long time. But this one was a quarter mile high bank dirt track, and it was unlike a lot of tracks around the U.S. because this one had heated stands.
Yeah, this is interesting. So South Carolina did have to deal with fans who would be cold depending on the time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Their solution for this was to wrap the grandstands in tin, to coat them in tin,
yeah,
and then have wood stoves underneath the grandstand to provide heat.
You know, I read something else about this, a little bit deeper into it, and tried to find out about those burners, like what they were using underneath.
Yeah.
And it turns out that those were old tobacco barn burners, the ones that they would use to heat the tobacco barns in the area. So they had those, you know, aplenty in that area.
Right.
And by simply keeping the stands enclosed in that tin and able to heat them from beneath, and it's like bun warmers. You know?
Yeah.
You got bun warmers there. So throughout the year, I mean, I doubt they had to deal with snow. If they did, it was very rare. And they probably wouldn't be racing, of course. But if it was cold, sure, the fans in the stands were nice and toasty. At least one part of them.
Yeah, at least one part. But the interesting thing about this is you would have thought this track would have been open for a longer amount of time because due to that innovative heating system, they were able to hold races when ordinarily a crowd wouldn't attend. You know?
Yeah, so they were able to start the season earlier and end the season later. And again, it's an unusual little quirk of this racetrack, and just made it stand out in the whole list. Really, I mean, we'll find other little interesting things along the way in these top ten, but it's just kind of a neat thing that when you think about it. And I think that right now a lot of that is gone. I mean, I don't think there's much left of this track.
Right, you can still see the dirt track in places, but it's not like. You can't go sit on the grandstand.
Yeah, this is probably one of those that's like better seen from the air. You know, like go on to Google Earth and take a look at that one. Number 9 on our list is the Tulsa Speedway, and it's exactly where you would think. It's in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Right.
This is a drag strip, and it was around for about 20 years. And those 20 years were between 1985 and the year 2005.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one in the area that's called the Tulsa Raceway, and that one is still open. That's not to be confused with the Tulsa Speedway that we're talking about. Now, the Tulsa Speedway is closed, and the reason that it closed was because noise complaints from the neighbors.
Yeah, that's it.
Didn't like the noise. You know, so here's what happens with a lot of these tracks, man. They're built out in an area that is, you know, relatively wide open, and this is a drag strip, so it needed a lot of space.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a ton of noise coming from this thing, of course, on, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday even. Sunday. You didn't think we could get through without doing that, right?
I was wondering. I was wondering who would do it first.
It wasn't bold enough. Maybe I should do it again.
But, yeah, give it a shot.
No, let's see. Okay. Sunday.
Yeah, that's not bad,
that's,
man.
That's all right. Let's see if I can get a little, maybe a role at a local radio station or something.
Yeah. Man. You gotta start small, man. So just start going up to people at traffic lights and announce what's happening there. And, you know, you might get picked up by...
I also might get shot.
Scout. Look, man. Okay. Gotta be ambitious.
So anyways, there's a lot of noise on the weekends.
Right.
And then, you know, of course, here's what happens. Urban sprawl, neighborhoods move into the area, right. They move close to the area, knowing that there's a racetrack there to begin with. And then they, after a few years, decide that's a lot of racket coming from over there. I don't like that. And then they start to set up, you know, decibel meters and realize that, yeah, it's exceeding the limits for our, you know, township or town, you know, city or whatever. And the, you know, those complaints have actually some kind of legal grounds at that point, and they're able to kind of force the small track out of business.
Like, I understand the idea of, you know, breaking an ordinance or a local law, but I have a tough time sympathizing with someone who moves next to a racetrack that has already been there.
Yeah.
And then expects the entire neighborhood to change.
Yeah. I mean, it was around for 20 years.
Yeah.
So you know that this wasn't something that just, like, when they first went in, it wasn't a problem right away. They didn't battle this for 20 years, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case. Now, I agree with you completely. Like, there's a lot of people that will buy a house near an airport and then complain about the plane noise.
Right.
Or they will, you know, same thing with the racetrack or a music theater of some kind, you know, like an amphitheater.
Sure.
Outdoor venue. But if you're there already, if you're in the neighborhood already, and then they build a racetrack near you.
That's different.
Or an airport near you. Oh, yeah. God, that'd be awful, wouldn't it? If they put in a small airport next door to you.
I don't know. I mean, I could use it, if I could just hang out there, I'd be all about it.
Yeah, if you could taxi your own plane right to your back door. How cool would that be? All right. So anyways, this place, this Tulsa Speedway was shut down. And again, the Tulsa Raceway is still open.
And the Tulsa Raceway, by all accounts, I haven't been personally, but by all accounts, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, if you like drag races, it's got a 60-foot wide concrete strip, and it has seating for 10,000 people.
10,000. So that's a big drag strip.
Yeah.
A big place. One thing about this, though, is if you look for photos of the Tulsa Speedway, again, it was only shut down in 2005. This is still mostly complete. It still looks like a usable racetrack. It's almost like you could move in and, you know, take the weed eater out there and maybe fresh coat of paint and it's ready to go. Well, okay, maybe not that simple, but you know what I mean. It's in decent shape. The grandstands, concession stands, all those are still intact. It actually hasn't, you know, it still has an abandoned look to it, but it's definitely savable at this point, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
your 2 cents.
Yeah, that's my, non-real estate agent, assessment of the property, yeah. I guess, is that, yeah, you could make this work again.
And I think it would be cool, but then also it goes to the question for a lot of people, you know, a lot of city planners probably ask this question too. How many raceways does a city need?
Well, also, you got those residents nearby that don't want it to be open. So,
oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
There'd be that little trouble, little issue. We're going to reopen the track. I'm sure that wouldn't be a popular viewpoint around Tulsa, but
yeah, I can see it.
Number 8 on our list.
Uh-huh.
Metrolina Speedway.
Yes, so stock car racing comes from the American South, and one of the biggest racing towns in this country is Charlotte, North Carolina. Home's NASCAR Hall of Fame, and it's the headquarters of a lot of top racing teams.
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of smiling as you're talking here, Ben, cuz I wonder if it's Metrolina or Metrolina. I don't know, because it's Carolina, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's in Charlotte, North Carolina. It could be Metrolina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It probably is Metrolina.
I feel like Metrolina is a good choice.
You know, it's funny, like, these old tracks, there's no one really around to pronounce it. You don't hear anybody pronouncing them, so I guess we'll just go with that and hope it works. But this was actually also called the Charlotte Fairground Speedway for a while. It was a dirt track, then it was paved in the 1970s, and initially it was a half mile clay bank track.
Uh-huh.
So it was a short track, a relatively short track. But as you said, Ben, this one actually held NASCAR races at some point in the 1970s. And I think even Dale Earnhardt raced here at some point.
Yeah, that's true.
And it had kind of like a Wild West mentality about it. You know, like, this is one of those tracks where you could just, anything was legal on the track. It was like you could bring anything out there and they would allow it. Nitrous oxide, any type of spoiler you wanted to bring,
right.
Whatever engine size you wanted. I'm sure they classified you against other cars that were similar.
Yeah.
But it was a run what you brung mentality that kind of ruled the night there.
Which I think is cool.
Yeah, I do too. I like it when they allow, this is so backwards when you see it happening.
Mm.
when they allow spectators to race on those tracks. And I'm guessing that this is one of those tracks that probably allowed that sort of thing. And I think that I've probably mentioned this on the air before, but I used to go to the Speedway up in Michigan that was one that on weekends would offer, you know, spectator races. You could borrow a helmet from somebody in the pits. As long as you had a seatbelt, you could race whatever your streetcar was on this track. And I don't remember the length of the track. I think it was called like Dixie Speedway or something like that. Or maybe I've got it mixed up with another one. It was farther north. It was, I can't remember exactly what city it was in or anything. I'll look this up afterwards and I'll kick myself for not remembering it. But, I saw some great races, you know, between some streetcars, you know, people that clearly had worked all week to try to get their car ready for that night to race against whoever they were up against, because it was just randomly paired against each other. And then it would kind of eliminate down to the eventual winner. This has all been for $100. People would win $100 at the end of the night if you were the champion of the spectator races. And I saw a guy in, I don't know what it was, like a Cavalier or a Sunbird or something like that, destroy his daily driver. I mean, it went straight into the wall. It felt terrible for the guy. Like, I mean, he came off a turn and just went just directly straight into one of the walls right against the grandstands. And it's like nobody could believe it. Of course, you know, everybody's like, oh, my, you know, hands on the head. Like, what is this guy thinking even doing this? And he got out and he was so, like, weak-kneed. He could barely walk. He was, like, all shaky because I think of the adrenaline and probably just the gravity of what had just happened, because he had just ruined his daily ride trying to win $100. And I think that happens a lot, but this track, this speedway in Charlotte, North Carolina, I really do appreciate that, as you do, that that kind of like bring whatever you want, have fun with it. It's all about, you know, who can go the fastest and, who's got the most guts, I guess.
Yeah, because now I'm thinking, I was originally thinking of, you know, cars that would have modifications that would keep them out of other races.
Yeah.
But now I keep thinking about what the strangest vehicle would have been.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, I bet there were both. I bet it was just like, you know, the street car that you just bought that week. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, the modifieds that were, you know, completely at the opposite end of the spectrum.
In my head, I have this very clear vision of a souped-up tractor. You know what I mean?
Well, you never know.
You never know. It could have happened.
Run what you brung. That's it.
Run what you brung. So we're going to move a little bit further north, but not too much, for our next one.
Marlboro, Maryland. And this is the Marlboro Motor Raceway. That's a hard one to say. Marlboro
Motor Raceway.
Opened in 1952 and was in existence until about 1970. This was a paved track, right?
That's right. This is a paved track, but it closed down due to safety issues.
Yeah, safety issues. Now, that's kind of a vague thing, right? But, you know, here's the thing. It could be that, you know, the standards of whatever series we're racing there were saying you got to install this type of barrier system, you have to install this type of fence, you have to have X number of feet between the grandstands and the track, that kind of thing. That's my gut instinct on this one, is that that's what shut it down. Without actually digging into the deep dive history of the Marlboro Motor Raceway, I don't know exactly what it was and the cost that was associated with whatever it was to keep it up to code, but I'm assuming that that's what it is. And when you close the track down for safety issues, that's usually what it is.
Right.
If it's something like a dangerous shape track, or, you know, the grading's wrong on the turn or something like that, typically a track will take care of that. They'll reshape the track so it's not a D shape anymore. Now it's an oval.
Right.
That kind of thing. You know. In this case, I think that, you know, it must have been something that was significant enough to actually put them out of business, to say it's not worth the effort to do that. Or maybe, you know, a lot of these small tracks, they don't do, you know, a pile of business anyways. I mean, maybe there's a better way to say that. They don't do such a brisk business that it has enough cash flow that they're able to do stuff like that. It's like, well, they're just like another job like anybody else. I mean,
in some cases, it's also seasonal. So for a part of the year, the business is not open.
Yeah, and that's typically when they do construction or something like that, when it's downtime. Without, again, digging deep into the Marlboro Motor Raceway, if anybody lives in that area around Marlboro, Maryland, and knows, you know, what happened to this thing back in 1970, like what was the safety issue that did shut it down, I'd love to find out specifically what that was.
And this is our first entry in the list that has an epilogue. to its ending.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's been repurposed, right?
Yeah, you can still go there. They use it for car club events. The mm-hmm. a lot of the track though is in bad shape because
mm-hmm.
again, it's expensive to maintain that stuff.
Sure. So they maintain part of it,
right? And if you happen to have a car club in the area and you haven't heard of this track, it sounds like a really cool opportunity to get your buddies together and explore some of Maryland's history.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and you know this one. We need to add one more little note about this one. This is a historic track for one big reason for General Motors, for Chevrolet. Mm-hmm. This is where the Chevy Corvette made its racing debut.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, makes sense, I guess, with the time frame. I mean, this is a brand-new track back in 1952, and with Chevy kind of playing around with Corvette in 1953, or that was when it was released,
yeah.
This is right where it was started. So another interesting little footnote in history, I guess, is that, you know, that's where Chevy debuted the Corvette.
And we will continue exploring abandoned racetracks after a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Not only are we back to the show, but we're going back down south to Manassas, Virginia.
Back in time.
And back in time.
Back in time all the way to 1948. And that is when the Old Dominion Speedway in Manassas, Virginia was constructed.
Right, yeah. And it began with some people just racing cars in a field.
Yeah, they were racing in a field back in the 1940s. I think that's pretty cool. And the way it's described in this article is that, you know, it started out with kind of like informal local races, you know, like where, you know, local guys and girls would get together and race whatever they had again mm-hmm. on these small track that they just kind of crafted out in the middle of nowhere, probably.
Yeah.
But as time, you know, progressed from 1948 on, as we said, you know, they paved this in the 1950s. They started incorporating things like a go-kart track and a drag strip and became kind of a big raceway in the 1950s. It was a major raceway. In fact, big enough that it drew NASCAR races.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did have a NASCAR speedway.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And as it was growing, though, the rest of the town and the metro area around it was growing as well. And this goes into the sprawl that we mentioned earlier in the episode.
Oh, there you go again. It's forcing them out.
Right. So the Washington area, you know, Washington, D.C., began expanding. And in the early 2000s, it was sort of pushing at the Old Dominion Speedway. And they kept going. Stayed open until 2012.
Yeah, they held on as long as they could. And you know, the thing about this is that it looks to me that it's still in relatively decent shape. I tried to look up some photos of this this track, and it's not in you know the worst condition ever, but it is starting to crumble and starting to decay. So
right.
It's got that abandoned look, obviously. But again, 2012 wasn't that long ago. It's 5 years as we were writing this or recording this podcast, rather. So it's in decent shape. It looks like it could be again resurrected, but, again, you got that urban sprawl. You got the, you know, the neighborhoods that are yeah. encroaching on the property. And I just don't think it's ever going to happen again for that place. It's going to have to be, you know, raised and repurposed to something else.
It's neighborhood opposition.
Yeah.
Also, as we mentioned, well, we talked a little bit about the environmental concerns that some folks will have mm-hmm. due to, you know, a bunch of oil and gas being in the soil.
Sure, brake fluid, all kinds of
sure.
fluid. I mean, anything that comes out of a car.
But the thing that is problematic there is, in some cases, a developer might want to buy it, but they can't because they're also buying the responsibility for cleaning up that place.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like a Superfund site or anything,
right.
but it's close. I mean, you would have to pay probably similar to the fines that would be associated with, like, if you bought an old piece of property that was owned by a gas station where they had underground tanks and had to remove those. And,
right.
And there's a certain amount of dirt that has to be removed from that area
mm-hmm.
And then, you know, taken somewhere that is – they can't dump it near, you know, a stream bed or just anywhere. Mm-hmm. It can't be used as fill dirt anywhere. It's not clean fill dirt.
Yeah.
That has to be hauled somewhere that is a contained area. I don't know about a contained area, but you know what I mean, like a quarantined area almost.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, there's a lot of cost associated with this due to environmental concerns. And I'm guessing that, again, you know, with the sprawl associated with, you know, the D.C. area, I don't think that this track is ever going to be brought back to life.
which is a crying shame because yeah. it's still pretty new. If you happen to have the means and want to buy a racetrack,
yeah, well, sure. If you want, maybe you could run bicycle races there. Something quiet.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, electric car racing.
Yeah,
you could run. Why haven't we thought of
electric cars?
Why?
All day.
Why have we not thought of this? This could be a yeah. Tesla track.
Yeah, we did an episode on electric racing a long time ago, and it has progressed.
Yeah, bring your Fisker Karma and race all day long. You could race all night long, and no one would even know.
No one would know at all.
Nighttime. Oh, you know what? Man, this is a great idea, Ben.
Yeah?
We should get together, you and I.
Okay.
Just pool all of our money together, buy one of these old tracks, refurbish it, you know, get it back in shape. One of the ones that's in decent shape already.
Sure, sure.
You know, like maybe just go out there and, you know, put down some Roundup and get rid of the weeds in between mm-hmm. the cracks. Then we could run a nighttime electric car series.
It's an interesting idea. It's definitely a niche. I'm worried a little bit about the marketing because does anybody really want to be known as the quietest racetrack on earth?
No, they don't. In fact, that's my main complaint with the Formula One replacement.
You know, yeah, it was supposed Formula to be the E or whatever.
Yeah, Formula E. That was it.
Yeah.
You know, here's the other thing. I guess you'd have to tell the crowd to be quiet. Like they couldn't cheer. Right, so you'd have to have like all these like,
oh yeah,
you know, like almost like in a like a television studio when they have like a like the sign that says shh,
yeah, or you applause,
yeah,
or they'd have to like snap their fingers instead,
oh, yeah, very beatnik.
Okay, well, I think it's a strong idea. I think we've got a little bit more work to do on it.
Well, I'm an idea guy. I'm not really one to institute the plan.
You're a big picture guy.
Yeah, I'm just I'm here to provide the idea. Now, maybe someone out there will do this. You know,
perhaps.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Just yeah. find the quietest fans you can find. That's all.
Just the quietest.
All right. We got to move on to number five.
That's right. This is a really interesting one, Scott.
This is maybe, to me, the most interesting one.
Now, the name is going to sound weird, ladies and gentlemen, but just go with me on this. It's called the Weetown Outlaw Speedway.
The Weetown Outlaw Speedway.
Near Fergus Falls, Minnesota. And no, it's not a track where, we're using tiny cars or having tiny people in tiny cars.
Tiny outlaws?
Tiny outlaws. hosted stock car races.
Regular size cars.
Regular size
yeah, okay.
cars.
I don't know if we have to really specify that the rest of the tracks in this list
yeah.
had regular size cars, unless they were quarter midgets or something like that.
Right.
Okay.
That actually is a good point. But, of course, the drivers were also presumably not all criminals. You know, this wasn't like a felony only racetrack.
They weren't wee drivers. They were they were normal sized drivers as well. Okay. All right. Well, what makes this one probably the most interesting one, and the reason that it closed down? I don't even have an idea of what years this one was open. I don't know the dates on this one. The problem with this track is that it continually was flooding.
Right. So no problems with the neighbors. Other tracks would close because there were high costs, or there were safety issues, or the facilities were aging out.
Yeah, or they couldn't draw fans.
Right.
That wasn't really the problem here. The problem was that they built this track on a floodplain, of all places.
Yeah.
Now, the assumption here is that it was cheap. It was inexpensive to build a track mm-hmm. on this property. And, of course, floodplain property is low rent compared to places that don't continually get flooded with water. So it makes sense that, you know, if you're looking for a bargain of a racetrack, you would want to build in this area, but then again, look what happens. I mean, you look at photos of this place, of this Weetown Outlaw Speedway, and it looks like you're looking at an arena where they might run, speedboat races or something.
Right. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's grandstands and then a lake right in front of the grandstands. And I don't think it's that way all the time. I think it's just that way when it floods, but it floods often. Because mm-hmm. again, floodplains flood.
Yeah.
Duh.
That's in the name.
Yeah, I know. But it had to, you know, here's the thing. It had to have also been on the deed to the property. So who's the genius that decided that they're going to build a speedway there?
That's a good question, too.
I mean, again, I understand pinching pennies when you have to.
Sure.
But, I mean, this just, it couldn't even go on. They couldn't recuperate from flood after flood after flood.
That's why I'm going to officially deem this one as one of the unsalvageable ones.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, honestly, though, it does look like you could use it for something else, though. These photos they're kind of comical. I mean, when you see the grandstands go right up to it, it looks like one of those arenas. You know, when you go to, SeaWorld or something like that, and you see a boating show that has, you know, like the, water skiers and they're doing formations and treks in the boats and all that stuff. Uh-huh. That's what this looks like to me. You expect to see a whale jump out of the middle of this arena.
That's kind of cool.
This arena, I should say arena. It's a track.
Yeah.
But, so it's very shallow water.
So you have to dig deeper into it.
Yeah.
You have to have an in-ground pool kind of situation.
Maybe they could work out some deal with radio control boats or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be a cool place to have that.
Yeah. You know, I wonder, because I know there are people who race radio control boats, race RC boats, but I feel like I haven't seen one for a long time.
Yeah, I haven't either. And, you know, it seems like, what was that? You remember that other fairgrounds that we talked about that had, that hosted a speedboat race on their horse track? Remember they flooded the horse track?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I wish I could remember the name of that right now. But that was a fun episode.
That was pretty interesting.
It seems like maybe that would that'd be a good fit here, too. But let's move on to number four.
Ah, yes, Scott, we must correct ourselves, my friend, because we earlier made a false guarantee of regular size cars.
That's right. Just moments ago.
Just moments ago.
Yeah.
Because
right.
We neglected to consider the Robin Wood Speedway.
Yeah, that's in Gastonia, North Carolina.
And it was built as a clay track for midget cars.
Mm-hmm.
It was super popular, though. It hosted, I don't have the entire career of the Speedway, but I know from 49 to 53, it hosted the Junior Grand Nationals.
Yeah. Now this one, I think this one opened right after World War II, or so we're talking around 1945, if I had to guess. And you're right about hosting the Nationals from, the Junior Grand Nationals from 1949 to 1953. And this is one of those, like, it's a high profile event. It's a thing that really drew in the crowds, really got the name on the map.
Yeah.
And it was owned by, of all people, Humpy Wheeler. Mm-hmm. Humpy Wheeler is a NASCAR promoter. He's about 80 years old now. He's still around.
Yeah.
At this point, at the recording of this. But he was the former president and GM of the Charlotte Motor Speedway towards the end of his career. So, a super charismatic guy that really knew how to promote the track and get people into the stands and get people, get butts in the seats, I guess, is what his job was. And he did that. He made it so popular, in fact, that the track itself just turned out to be too small. Of all things, like, this one suffered because the track was too small. They couldn't house enough fans, couldn't house enough people.
Everybody wanted to go.
Yeah, the rest of the tracks on our list here, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them had an issue with getting, again, butts in the seats. They couldn't do it. This guy had the opposite problem. So they had to move to a bigger place, because they had I'm going to ballpark this. They had 5,000 fans. They needed to be able to get 10,000 in. If they had 10,000, they needed to get 20,000 in. It was something like that. That kind of proportion. It was just that much too small.
So the much larger Carolina Speedway was built as a replacement, and then they abandoned the Robin Wood Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
This one also is one of the speedways that you would have a tough time noticing.
Yeah. You might not even be able to find it at all. You'd have to know the coordinates almost, really. And even from aerial views, you can barely make out where this thing was. It's just there's barely anything left at all of it. So if you're, someone who's out searching for this one, good luck. Talk to an old timer in the area and find out where it was. And maybe they can point to you this was turn three. There's a little bit of banking left over here in this field. But that's it.
And you have the perfect opportunity to begin your investigation because we will return after a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Did anybody happen to find anything? Anybody take that time to get some clues?
All that time?
All that time.
Yeah.
Well, let us know. Let us know if you're able to do that. I feel like such a jerk for doing that, for giving people homework.
Yeah, you're like the dean of car stuff. You're like making me work on the weekends when I don't want to work.
Yeah, but if you do what you love, it's never really work.
That's true, I guess. And looking for old racetracks is kind of fun, right? I
mean, that's a cool thing.
We've got three more here. You want to go through the top three, I guess?
Top three.
If you want to call it top three. The number three track on our list here is the I-70 Speedway, and that's in Odessa, Missouri. And it runs right alongside I-70, as you would expect.
Right, yeah. It's a shorter track. It was built in 1969, and for the time, it was pretty high end in comparison to a lot of other racetracks.
Oh, that's right. This is the one that had not bench seats, but had like individual seats for the fans.
Right. Yeah.
Also had things like VIP suites and lots of concession stands and nice bathrooms. And it was unusual for 1969 to find this kind of thing at a smaller track. And as you said, it was small. It was a 5/8. It was a 5/8 mile paved short track. It was an oval. And one other, like, really unusual thing about this track is that it switched back and forth between paved and dirt. So,
right, yeah.
So in 1969, it started out as a paved track. Then in the early 1980s, they made it back into a dirt track. Mm-hmm. And then in about 1988, I think it was, they paved it again. So it kind of has flip-flopped back and forth, you know, based on the needs. But again, this was a, I guess what makes this one stand out the most, really, is that it was just such a posh track at the time. It was just something that was kind of unheard of in that era.
Yeah, and it was very popular because NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series went there. It also hosted American Speed Association races. And the story of the closure is a little bit vague.
Yeah.
You know, there are some questions I have about it. So they got a new owner, and shortly after that, in 2008, the Speedway was closed.
Yeah, so from 1969 until 2008, this thing was owned and operated by, I think, the same person. I'm not entirely sure. But again, it changed ownership in around 2008, and it did shut down. So it's a little bit murky on the details about what happened after that point. But but again, sprint cars, modified cars, the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, some big names were there. So all the way up until 2008, and I would guess that this is one that you could probably still see some remnants of this track. I haven't even looked for photos of this one, anyways, you check it out and see what it looks like. I bet it has that kind of ghostly, abandoned look if it's still standing,
which I think is so cool.
Yeah.
And it'd be really interesting if any of these still have drivable tracks to just take a car out on the track. And I don't know. It feels like you're racing in a haunted house. You know what I mean?
You know, I've seen people do this. I'm glad you kind of mentioned this. And before we get to their top two, I was thinking about some other tracks. Like people have, kind of resurrected the tracks, you know, that were long gone. Like, and one thing that doesn't really relate to auto racing, but sort of does. It's a bicycle racing velodrome that they discovered in Detroit that had been overgrown for so long. It was in a park, I think, right in downtown. And I think some like local hipster guys got together with like, you know, a bunch of lawnmowers and kind of just carved this thing out of, you know, the ground where it was kind of buried and covered with weeds, and people had, you know, there's been graffiti all over it and everything. But it was a concrete velodrome for bicycles. And they cleaned it up enough that people could actually ride their bikes on it again. And I think I've seen go-karts and things like that on it, too. So
wow.
It reminded me of it, you know, with bank turns and everything. But I would bet that people do this in you know, some of the like more rural areas of our country where they find, you know, like an old motocross track or something. And it doesn't take a whole lot of work to get it back into shape. And that becomes kind of their own private playground for a while until they lose interest in it. And then, you know, of course, again, nature takes over. But, man, that would be fun, wouldn't it, to have knowledge of a local track somewhere here in Atlanta or near Atlanta, maybe up in the mountains somewhere, and just go up there with, you know, a weed whacker and some tools, some light tools, and maybe race our own cars.
That would be, I mean, I don't think it's impossible. I think it's actually within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, but again, this comes into the trespassing issues too. So
right.
Somebody probably owns the property. It doesn't just, you know, just doesn't sit there really.
Yeah, somebody probably owns it.
Yeah, whether it's state or county or something.
There's not a lot of unowned land.
It's a nice dream though, isn't it? Wouldn't that
it's
be fun?
Cool. And if, you know, if you're the owner of that property, then probably your only concern is liability if something goes wrong.
Oh, sure. You can't carry insurance for something like that, you know, for, clandestine racing.
And this brings us to number two on our list, this concept of ownership, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Vineland Speedway. So this is in Cumberland County, New Jersey. And let's be honest, Scott, in the U.S., a lot of people have a slight stereotype about racing fans,
mm-hmm.
that we're all from the South.
Yeah.
Right? This proves racing is popular around the world, and the Vineland Speedway was doing pretty well. It had stock car racing, drag racing, motorcycle racing, and more. It opened in 1955.
Yeah.
Like a lot of places, it was a dirt track at first.
Yeah, oval track, yep.
Dirt oval track, and a few years later in 58, they paved it. But despite the fact that it was in a good location, despite the fact that multiple races and good crowds, eventually it had to close.
Yeah, not that long, much later. I mean, this is 10 years later when it closed. It was only open from 1955 until 1965, but, you know, you'd mentioned that they had all that different, all those different types of racing, and they right. all didn't happen on the oval track. They also had a paved road course for sports cars.
Right.
And so, you know, they got this, you know, a pretty good variety of types of racing that they could do there. The reason that it closed, I mean, it was as we heard, it's a well-rounded racing venue.
Yeah.
The problem was money. They just didn't have enough money coming in. And,
but why did they not have enough money?
Well, the reason was the track owner had to lease the land from several different landowners. So mm-hmm. rent, as you can imagine, is expensive and probably changing all the time.
I mean, yeah, not a good look.
No, exactly. So there's all these little bits of land that he's trying to lease in order to keep this whole operation running. And in 1965, they decided that, they're just going to sell off part of this, this track, part of the property, to a local community college, and that's when the Vineland Speedway closed back in 1965. So, mm-hmm. Sad story to end this one.
Yeah.
I guess we're not to our number one track yet, but, for this one, that's a terrible way to end. I mean, 10 years later and something like, you know, different landowners and changing rent and all that, that's what gets in the way. That's awful. And it sounds like it was a popular venue.
Yeah. It's a shame.
Yeah.
But that's business.
I guess so. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And this brings us to the very last item on our list. Number one, the North Wilkesboro Speedway.
Yeah. Now I have a number on this one as opening in 1948. And I'll tell you why. Because they mentioned that this one kind of matched the history of NASCAR, really. It opened right in the early days of NASCAR. So NASCAR began in 1948. I'm assuming that is when this track was built. I mm-hmm. can't find a definite number on when it was built. All the stories that I read just seem to neglect that fact. They don't tell me when it opened, but they will tell you when it closed. It closed in 1996. So it's been closed for what? Is that 21 years now?
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe. 96 was 21 years ago.
I am ready to completely forget about that.
But this is probably one of the best known abandoned racetracks in the entire United States. Now, North Carolina, that's where this one's located. Again, this is the North Wilkesboro Speedway,
mm-hmm.
and this one has an extremely rich NASCAR history. You know, the whole area does, really, all of North Carolina. But this track, this particular track, spent nearly 50 years as a stop on NASCAR's Winston Cup Series circuit.
And this track was actually older than NASCAR.
Oh, it's older than, okay, so it predates 1948 then. So it was around for, 50 plus years then. But this is really interesting. The guy that was named NASCAR's first champion, the guy's name was Robert Red Byron, mm-hmm. Was crowned champion there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, deep roots with NASCAR, a lot of history at this track. A lot of fans really hated to see this one go in 96.
But its history was, in a way, part of its downfall.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about modern racetracks.
Right.
They've got these enormous suites. They've got huge grandstands. The number of people that a NASCAR race draws today is nothing like what it drew back in 1948. I mean, it was popular.
Yeah.
It wasn't as popular as it is now or, you know, even a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it just didn't have the amenities that the teams and the fans needed. So they couldn't keep up with what, you know, the modern teams needed or what the fans wanted.
Yeah, and the racing teams also had some objections to the track, especially they thought it had uneven banking and was short. There were just numerous problems that come with age.
Sure, yeah. And so they closed down in 1996, as we said. You know, a lot of fans were pretty upset about this one, but it had to go. I mean, it was time. It had, you know, was it long in the tooth? Is that the saying?
Yes.
It was a little bit long in the tooth. So back in 2015, there was a photographer. His name is Seth Lawless. And he went, to this track and did some incredible photographs of the facility, you know, mm-hmm. the abandoned facility. It had been shut down for quite a time there. I guess it was, 2015. That would have been 19 years after it was shut down. So you can imagine the condition, a little run down, but that's what he was looking for. And he's got some excellent photos online of it. There's a ton of photos out there if you want to take a look for the North Wilkesboro Speedway in North Carolina. And I think you'll be impressed with what you see. Those photos give you a feel for, you know, kind of the allure of what we've been talking about all day.
Is
like, it's just such an interesting thing to think about, you know, the history that went down there. All the fans that would go there every weekend, how alive these places were, and now how dead they are. You know, they're just like shells of their former self.
Yeah. And I know this is kind of weird, but I suspect it's pretty common for any of us who have had the opportunity to explore large abandoned structures, especially when you walk through an empty area and you think 5,000, 10,000 people were sitting here. You know, it's almost impossible not to imagine like the shouting or the distant cheers. It's sort of the way that people feel like they hear the ocean when they put a seashell to their ear.
Yeah.
And that to me is one of the strange places where you can almost tangibly feel history.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if it's possible to save or somehow reuse any of these sites, absolutely should. So in the case of the Vineland Speedway, they turned part of the land was sold to a community college,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think there's still value in these places. There are things we can do. Is every single one on this list going to be revitalized? Almost absolutely not.
Yeah.
Like, I would be very surprised if any of them were, although I do think it's worth the effort.
Yeah, you know, I've heard, I think there were other ones on this list, and I don't even know if we mentioned this or not, but, you know, after they were, I guess, used up, if you want to put it that way, you know, once they were done with hosting, you know, the car races,
uh-huh.
You know, and it's left abandoned for a while, you know, maybe a year or two, and then suddenly, you know, someone decides they're going to put in a motocross track, but they're going to use part of the front stretch, as that, because it has the, you know, the grandstands. They're still usable at that point. You know, they're not decayed to the point where they're not able to be sat on or stepped on without, you know, cracking or crushing. Some people use it for stuff like that. You know, what does that cost? You bring in a few truckloads of dirt and you create a motocross track on the infield.
Yeah.
You don't use turns, you know, 2, 3, and 4, mm-hmm. but you do use turn 1 and the main stretch.
Right.
And there you go. You got a nearly ready-made facility there for you for a motocross event. I mean, it's pretty easy to see what you could do with this. Or you could turn it into a go-kart venue for a while. It seems like, you know, if you get to it early enough, you can mm-hmm. reuse what's there. If you get to it later, maybe, you know, you start over. It's a fresh start for somebody that wants to develop something like that. I don't know what the market is right now for, you know, small tracks, but they're still all over the place. People are still going to dirt tracks. People are still going to these small paved tracks.
Yeah.
I don't see why, you know, developers don't, use what's there, but I guess maybe, you know, it does come down to some of the neighborhoods encroaching on the area. You know, it used to be out in the field, but now it's surrounded by, you know, local businesses and it's just impossible. So, I'm talking myself in both directions here.
Right.
It's like, it's a great idea. It's a terrible idea. It's possible. It's not possible.
I think the bottom line here, Scott, is that, everybody in the audience, yes, you ladies and gentlemen, need to act now and get into the game early before Scott becomes an electric racing tycoon.
That was a terrible idea, wasn't it? Well, maybe it was the best idea I've ever had. I don't know. But
that doesn't make it not a terrible idea.
You know what else this made me think of? And
what's
just
that?
Just briefly, because I know we're wrapping up here.
Sure.
But do you remember when we were going through that really serious drought here in Georgia for a while? And Lake Lanier, which is this huge lake, it's 38,000 acres of lake.
Mm-hmm.
And it was down like, it seems like it was like down 20 feet in the shores. It was crazy.
You could see all the stuff that had been submerged as the water receded.
Yeah, there were, you know, boats, of course, and like old buildings and everything, and cemeteries that were emerging and things like that. There was a racetrack that emerged from underneath, and they knew it was there.
No way.
Yeah, there was I think it was a drag strip, I believe. And, you know, that was something that was only visible for a short amount of time because, you know, it came back into view. This was a, just so you're clear on this, it's a reservoir that was created by, you know, damming, a river that runs through this whole thing.
Right. Because Georgia, fun fact, has no natural lakes.
Is that right?
I believe so.
All reservoirs. So, mm-hmm. This is a lake, or I keep saying that. It's a river that runs on down to Florida, I believe. And so we're constantly in this battle with Florida over who has the water rights to Lake Lanier, even though it's right here in northern Georgia. It's a damming issue, you know, like, you know, how much we're holding back or whatever.
Right.
But, so when this thing was super low, it revealed all kinds of things. And this drought revealed this forgotten racetrack, this forgotten drag strip. And you can see photos of, you know, the old stands, because I think the stands were concrete. I think they were like steps that were poured. And, you know, they were visible for a short amount of time, and then it was flooded back again. Of course, somebody knew about it, you know, when the area, the region was flooded, but it just kind of gone off of everybody's radar. We just forgot about it. And
yeah.
I think you can probably find it on some old maps, but there's really not a whole lot of mention of it anywhere outside of this appeared again back in, you know, I think it was like 4 or 5 years ago now, maybe even more, maybe it was like 6 or 8. But it was kind of an interesting thing that happened. And I would assume that that sort of thing happens all around. You know, there are other racetracks that have been, flooded.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
built on floodplains.
Yeah, well, yeah, built on floodplains or, you know, when they flood regions, you know, to create reservoirs
right.
and when a new dam goes in, a lot of history is lost. And this racetrack was one, you know, one little bit of that. I would guess that there's a lot of those all over the United States, all over the world, really. They're just kind of forgotten.
Yeah, and we want to hear about your experiences with them. If you were lucky enough to go to one of the raceways we mentioned or speedways we mentioned today, we'd like to hear about your experience. If there's one in your neck of the global woods, we'd also like to hear that story. You can contact Scott and I on Facebook and Twitter, where we are CarStuffHSW. You can check out our earlier episode on abandoned car factories, along with every single episode we've ever done, on our website, carstuffshow.com. Which, oddly enough, you know, I was thinking about this.
What?
Our biographies both make pizza jokes.
Yeah, they do.
That was it just a weird day?
Coincidence, I guess. We both love pizza.
That's true, man. If I was not doing, I would do an episode just about pizza, but I can't figure out how to relate it.
I mean, you ask me about me, like about myself, and I'll tell you what kind of pizza I love.
Yeah, what is it?
I like all kinds of pizza, Ben. I mean, there's honestly, I probably have some favorites, but again, that's another podcast. That's a long podcast.
That's a long.
I mean, I do some serious research into pizza. Honestly,
that's true. Oh, you know what? I got really into a while back or pizza commercials from other countries. Have you ever seen those?
No, I haven't.
Dude, they are at the forefront, my friend. They're doing amazing stuff. They got like shrimp in the crust.
Oh, you've lost me already.
And they got corn. Oh yeah.
Wait, shrimp in the crust?
Yes, sir.
Oh my God, it sounds like someone just cleaned the kitchen, if that's the case.
All right, look, well, I have some stuff to show you. We've got to go. In the meantime, we hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you would like to write to us directly, all our best ideas come from you, even the pizza-related ones. So write to us. We are
CarStuff@HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.